Hello and welcome everybody to a special edition of the Politics, Politics, Politics podcast covering the reversal, now official, of Roe versus Wade by the Supreme Court, a 6-3 majority with Chief Justice John Roberts joining in against the three liberal justices, therefore reversing Roe versus Wade, which has been the precedent in this matter for over 50 years. I'm not going to get into the jurisprudence of the ruling right now because, as you might imagine, this is a dizzying moment in American politics and American culture as well. Roe versus Wade is something that was not only extraordinarily divisive, it was sort of old growth. I mean, look, this thing was put into place over a decade before I was born, and I have gray hair now. So the change in where we are now is something that I think people are rightfully emotional and confused about. So I'm going to do my best to try to keep things as concrete as possible. First things first, what states does the fall of Roe immediately affect? As many are aware, pro-life politicians and activism in America has long pushed for things called trigger laws. Trigger laws are on a state-by-state basis, and they would effectively have either near total bans or very restrictive bans on abortion in the case that Roe versus Wade was overturned. Since that has now happened, these laws are now applicable. So let's go through them. Kentucky, Louisiana, and South Dakota have trigger laws that immediately go into effect after Roe has fallen. Let me add a caveat here that there's going to be a lot of legal back and forth on this, but these are the laws as they are written. Idaho, Tennessee, and where I am right now, Texas, have trigger laws that go into action 30 days after Roe has fallen. Arkansas, Mississippi, Missouri, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Utah, and Wyoming have trigger laws that go into effect when the attorney general, governor, or a specified official recognize that Roe has fallen. This is obviously complicated because state by state, these are all separate laws. It's not like they have all, you know, copied and pasted from GitHub. Some of them have different allowances. Most of them have allowances for abortion in the case of the health of the mother. Not all of them have rape or incest provisions. And also none of those states count states that had pre-Roe abortion laws that are on the books. So how does this affect the midterms, which is something that, has been the number one question that I have gotten since this happened. Does this affect the midterms? Yes. By how much is the question? I do think that in red states that do have trigger laws, candidates will now have cause, Democratic candidates will have cause to rally their base. I think, this is my sense, and we're getting a little bit out of my depth in terms of confidence here, but it is my sense that these trigger laws were nearly the exclusive domain of pro-life activism. And Roe versus Wade had been such a salve for this issue that they were not looked at as immediate threats in the same way that other state laws that had more immediate implication would. Whether or not you want to go back in time and see that as a mistake for state Democratic parties and forces and the national funding of those, that is up to you. But I do think that if you look at what these laws are putting into place, they are out of step with mainstream thought, even in states like Texas. So, for example, staying in Texas, if Beto O'Rourke, who is running for governor, runs on a modest platform, on day one in the O'Rourke administration for Texas, we will codify some element of this. Let's say it's, you know, even just what it was before, with where people were upset about the abortion restrictions at 8 weeks. It's 10 weeks, it's 12 weeks, something like that. Or that you are safeguarding the exceptions for rape, incest, and health of the mother. I think Beto would have more of a shot of rallying a larger crowd than if, let's say, he goes on what currently is the national platform for abortion rights with the Democrats, which is what passed the House, that has on-demand abortion through the third trimester. My larger point with all of this is to say that abortion is stratified as a political topic because we had Roe to lean on. Like two people screaming at each other and trying to fight at a bar, the taunts, body language, and wild arms can often be worse when there's a bouncer separating them. Well, that bouncer is gone now. There are going to have to be real conversations from the Democratic side on what they want to push for and where they want to push for it. If we are only looking at this as a cold, calculated political issue, then I think it would behoove the Democrats to not be particularly gatekeeping on where people would run on any kind of safeguarding for abortion rights. Does this totally flip the idea of a red wave? No. I think that the economy will still drive votes for the House to the GOP, and I think that the Senate remains to be seen. Although if there's a close race, possibly. But even then, I would say that the strongest candidate versus the weakest candidate is probably the Georgia race of Warnock versus Walker, and Georgia is not exactly the kind of state that might flip on this. Maybe it will. We don't know. I mean, ultimately, that's one thing that I do want to underline here, is that we simply do not know what this issue is when the restrictor plate has been removed. We don't know what the passion for Roe versus Wade is. We don't know what these laws mean. We know that they are there. We know that they are going into effect, these trigger laws. We do not know what life is like under them. So we will all have to live this together. You know, may you live in interesting times and all that. Final thing. Can anything be done in Congress now? This is Senator Joe Manchin. I trusted Justice Gorsuch and Justice Kavanaugh when they testified under oath that they also believe Roe versus Wade was set a legal precedent, and I am alarmed that they chose to reject the stability of the ruling that has provided for two generations of Americans. Joe Manchin is pro-life, and he explicitly went on to say that he would back a bill codifying Roe versus Wade. Look, politicians like predictability. It helps them fundraise and maximize incumbency. But like I've said a few times already, we're in unpredictable territory now. That being said, we do live in a world where a bipartisan group just got a gun control bill passed. They got infrastructure passed. Could a modest federal protection for abortion rights get 10 GOP votes? And when I say modest, I mean, if we're looking at 8 to 12 weeks with exceptions beyond, that covers roughly, and I'll have to get my numbers right, but I think even conservatively, it's like 70% of all abortions in America. Now, that is very narrow compared to what the Democrats are currently asking for federally. But I don't know. I don't know where it goes from here. I was not particularly buoyed by President Biden's speech on this, which effectively with only a glancing look toward Congress, it just turned into a pitch that abortion is on the ballot in November, which has been the rallying cry. You know, you got to wonder whether or not there's going to be some soul searching from some of the Democrats that are still in power, considering they had a filibuster proof majority in 2008, where they could have codified Roe. And that's before we get into, you know, the Ruth Bader Ginsburg of it all. And oh boy, dizzying. Obviously, this will be a top conversation through not only the weekend, but the rest of my life, the rest of your lives. This is the beginning. This is not the end. I will see you guys next week.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.